Hi, everyone. Welcome to Neighbor Science Season 2.
Episode 2 of Season 2.
Episode 2 of Season 2?
Is it? I've lost track. No. Oh, wait, no, it's not. It's Episode 1.
Yeah, this is going to be Episode 1. We are going to review the last 2 decades, a.k.a. 2017.
Yeah. Yeah. Was it 2? I felt like it was more like 5 or 6.
So this is going to be an extremely long episode, probably about 16 hours or so of content for you guys. I'm taking a couple days of PTO to work on this, so subscribe to our Patreon so that I can just quit my job and do, you know, the Joe Rogan experience for Bookchin Boys.
I have, for everyone's information, I have actually quit all my jobs so that I can do this full time. and I don't mean podcasting, I mean this podcast. It's too much. Otherwise, we're never going to get it all done this year.
Yeah, so just in time, you know, perfect timing. We started a Patreon right before they announced that they were going to add a bunch of fees to fuck over people who can only pay $1 a month. If you have an extra $1 a month, go ahead and give it to us. We want to get Peter some new equipment. And if you... if you become our contributor, you will receive a feudal title and some land holdings. I mean, if you contribute over $1, if you contribute $1, you're going to be at the peasant level, and you're actually going to have to do a significant amount of farm work. So only do that if you have $1 a month and about 25 hours a week of extra free time to us rent in kind.
Or you can set up your own cotton farm and send us a lot of cotton that you have to farm yourself. You can't be using labor of any other kind.
Yeah, GMO-free.
GMO-free cotton. And then, don't worry, we will obviously process that cotton and eventually produce merchandise that we will sell for exorbitant amounts of money.
Yeah. Cool. So,
okay. So that's about the Patreon. And, I think... Let's actually get started with today's show. Let's tell people what we're going to do.
Actually, I do have one more thing. I have a correction. I think it was episode 10, I was talking about Olympia, Washington, and I said that they have a directly democratic city council. That is actually not correct. Chris Ross from Olympia has corrected me. They have a directly democratic organization, but it's not an official government body. The town council is still just a regular ass town council. But they do have anarchists on it. So,
And just for further clarification, we're singling out Chris Ross's comment, but we actually had thousands of our followers, bring this to our attention, and we just figured we'd focus on one of those comments because he's actually from Olympia.
Yeah, and also to clarify, some of you may hear this and think, like, oh man, Ryan was wrong about something. I was actually not wrong at all. Based on the information that I had, I was completely correct.
Yes.
And I stand by what I said. But now that I have new information, I'm going to say something different.
Yes. And look, people need to understand that you can only be wrong if you know that you're wrong. If you don't know that you're wrong, then you're not actually wrong.
Yeah. So I knew that I was wrong. I'm not wrong. You know, I was lying. That's what the difference is.
Yeah, definitely.
It's called propaganda, folks.
And it's, yeah, we read Lenin on a daily basis, so we know how to propaganda.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get started taking a look at the last 26 years or so.
Yeah. So I think we can all agree that we're sick and tired of hearing how 2017 was the worst year ever.
Yeah, no.
I got to a point where I thought to myself, oh my god, do these people understand the history of humanity?
Yeah.
And how bad things have been in the past?
Yeah, 2017 was actually the funniest year ever.
Yeah, man. okay, look, we did lose one or two iconic stars, and the year started off with a lot of hype about the number of big stars that died. But it really picked up after that, man. Like, we had some funny shit happen this year.
Yeah, and okay, all right. You know, the Republicans did this tax cut thing and cut some social services, and, you know, thousands of people are going to die. But let's look at the big picture here, okay? 2017 was hilarious.
It really frickin' was, man.
So we're going to do a top 10 funniest things of 2017. Peter, did you make your own list, or are we just...
I didn't because I've been too busy finishing off the work that I now have quit from so that I can focus on today's podcast.
Yeah, you should have cut that fifth book out.
I should have, but I didn't because I love knowledging.
Yeah, well, that's okay, because my list is objectively perfect, so...
Well, there are two items on that list that you haven't mentioned, but I don't actually think that my two items top anything on your list.
Okay, well, so, let's tack yours on to the honorable mentions. So, my honorable mentions, we'll start with that. Mnuchin and Louise Linton posing with the sheet of $1 bills with Louise and the opera dress. Hilarious.
It was. I actually, even if I was a professional comedy writer, I couldn't have made that shit up.
Yeah.
Because honestly, the way Louise Linton looked at the love of her life in that photo while it was being held by Steve Mnuchin was fantastic.
Soviet propagandists could not have come up with a better image.
Definitely not.
Even if they made one up whole cloth.
If Lenin had still been alive, he would have cried himself to sleep for weeks out of sheer joy.
I actually looked, I went and watched the video of it happening just to see if there were obvious signs that Linton was, like, having an orgasm. Sadly, no, but still very funny. I loved Mnuchin's shit-eating grin the whole time. He looks like,
you
he
have
looks
to
like
be...
Trump in a big truck, you know, but he's got a sheet of dollar bills.
But, okay, although there aren't obvious signs, you have to also take into account the fact that conservatives are very conservative about this sort of thing, and they have years of practice of hiding their public orgasms.
Yeah, that's true, and probably most of her muscles are paralyzed from Botox and stuff, so maybe that kind of muted her response a little bit.
There's also all the practice from having to fake orgasms with Steve Mnuchin himself, so... Okay, yeah, no. Poof, below the belt. Okay.
Okay, okay, so yeah. Next honorable mention from me is the whole soy boy meme. So sadly, 2017 was the demise of one of my favorite insults ever, cuck, which has a whole host of hilarious associated terms like uncucking the polls and stuff like that. Cuck has fallen out of favor. Now the big thing among the alt-right is soy boy, based on the idea that soy contains phytoestrogens, which are literally the same thing as estrogen, and turn you into a trans woman. And the funniest part about this was that they also think that onions are full of testosterone, or elevate your testosterone levels. So there was a very funny spate of dipshits drinking onion juice and wanting to die because they drank onion juice in order to become more manly.
I am at a loss for words. I wasn't even aware of this.
Yeah.
And
well, you're not as now online I as think, me.
Yeah, no, I'm not. But I feel like there are several people who should probably contemplate killing themselves after that. Wow.
Yeah, the best thing was, like, you know, the threat of people drinking onion juice. A couple of them were like, oh, well, what if you cook it? And then so people tried that, and no, it's still just as bad to drink raw, like, cooked onion juice.
Cooked onion juice.
I mean, it's not exactly like macing yourself, like drinking a raw onion would be, but yeah, pretty awful. They said that no one wanted to stand within 10 feet of them because they smelled like onions, like straight up, like they were, it was coming out of their pores and everything.
Oh my god! Like, one of them was what like, the fuck were these people
thinking?
I took
like 4 showers and I still smell like onions.
Gee, I wonder why, dipshit.
All right, so my last honorable mention, this is going to be quick, is because there's been so many takes on it. Brain Force Plus, the famous nootropic from InfoWars, containing, you guessed it, soy. Yeah, that's my third honorable mention.
Anything done by Alex Jones, honestly, I think it should be up for awards for comedy.
Yeah.
Because I honestly, he is the only person on the planet that no matter what happens, I don't think I'm ever going to be able to take him seriously.
No, definitely not.
Definitely not. And like, it's a foregone conclusion that if I see Alex Jones, my laugh reflex kicks in.
Yeah. Oh, there was also that one Alex Jones video that should receive an honorable mention of him paying some guy to pretend to attack him on the street by throwing coffee at him and then laughing like an insane person. And then, you know, Alex got to act all tough and chase him off. Pretty funny video. Especially because you can tell that the coffee is not hot at all, because Alex Jones does not react in any way to getting coffee spilled on him. It was great.
I do know there was that incident where he was being sued. And
man, should be in the top 10 actually.
Yeah, and he basically came out and admitted that the entire Alex Jones persona of InfoWars is exactly that. It's a persona. It's not who he really is as a person. It's just this character that he plays to hype up his fan base, and basically they're all fucking idiots for falling for it.
Yeah.
Well done on being completely fucking trolled by your own god. Yeah, so my honorable mentions, first up for me, without a doubt, is the Pepsi ad that was done by the Kardashians.
Oh yeah, that was good.
And what was funny about this whole thing for me is someone somewhere at Pepsi sat around bored as shit at work, trying to figure out bosses riding their ass, they need to come up with a good ad campaign idea, and they sat there and thought about this while watching some protest video and went, holy shit, I just thought of something golden.
And it was actually golden.
It then went through several stages of approval before we get to the final product that we ended up getting to see. And all of the people involved in that process thought, man, this is a good idea. To me, that is fucking hilarious.
They probably focus grouped it too. They probably brought people in. Were like, what do you think of this? And no one was like, this is hilariously stupid. If you play this, everyone in the country is going to laugh at you.
I think what happened is they got their focus group from the Deaf, Dumb, and Blind Society. And basically when they asked them, what did you think of the ad?
Good? Good? Did you say good? Yes?
people.
Grunt once for yes, and twice for absolutely.
That was number one. And
the other great part about that whole thing was people in real life protests trying to hand Pepsis to cops and videoing themselves doing it. That was great.
yeah. The one thing I was very surprised about with that whole thing is that Coke didn't jump on it.
Yeah.
I didn't see anything done by Coca-Cola. America is one of the only countries in the world that allows competitive advertising. And your companies really do. They jump on it, and the ad campaigns between Coke and Pepsi are kind of legendary everywhere else.
Because... Wait, what do you mean we're one of the only countries that allows competitive advertising?
Oh, yeah, no, in South Africa, you are not allowed at all. It is completely illegal to even so much as mention a competitor in one of your advertisements.
Oh, okay, that's weird.
Like, there's a grilled chicken company called Nando's, and they're actually quite famous for their advertisements.
Yeah, that's my coworker's favorite place to eat.
In South Africa, the Nando's ads are—they really are the stuff of legend. They're on point. They touch on political issues at times. And it's always really cleverly done. Anyone who wants to can go look up the Nando's xenophobia ad in South Africa, and it is golden.
I'll have to check
absolutely
that out.
Golden. throughout the advertisement, they've got all the different immigrants in South Africa disappearing in a puff of smoke as they try and get rid of all the immigrants until eventually there's just this bushman left and he's standing there looking at the camera going, fuck you, I was here first. But they got sued quite heavily at one stage because they were competitively advertising against KFC.
Oh, those bitches.
They were directly ripping off a KFC ad. They mentioned KFC several times in the advertisement, and they got sued badly. Most of the rest of the world does not allow competitive advertising at all.
Huh. I had no idea.
It's a very American thing.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So today's not just about funny shit. We're also learning stuff.
Yeah.
I can't remember now what my second thing was, and I didn't write it down.
Ah, damn.
So maybe we'll say that it's something memory related. Actually, I'm going to probably piss off my wife quite a bit now by saying that the funniest thing ever happened last night when I threatened to pick her up and toss her off the balcony. As a joke, it was an absolute joke. And when I started moving towards her, she literally, and you know, when you do something like that with someone, I've been joking like this with people my whole life, and when you do something like that, they tend to grab onto something.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, I'm going to hold on to this and you won't drag me away. She flopped onto the bed, just like tried to make herself a dead weight because she couldn't think of anything to grab onto. And I packed up laughing. So for me, that was one of the funniest moments of the year. Okay, but now let's get on to the actual list of top 10 funniest things.
Okay, I thought about this list quite a bit. It went through many revisions.
I'm just curious, are you going from 10 to 1?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
least to funniest? Okay.
Yeah, we got to save the best for last. So number 10 is... Rand Paul getting put in the hospital by his neighbor Rene Boucher over lawn clippings or trees ruining the guy's view or some shit.
I can just picture him sitting there going, you are absolutely violating the non-aggression principle.
yeah, for sure. Apparently he didn't even see Rene coming or hear him coming because he was like wearing those dorky dad ear protectors that they wear when they mow the lawn. So he probably just got fucking laid out on the floor, like Waterboy style.
Yeah, I can kind of picture this. Like, he's busy mowing the lawn, and out of the corner of his eye, he sees some kind of blurry movement, and as he turns, in comes the fist, connects, everything goes to slow motion, we see some teeth fly, and he hits the ground.
Yeah. Oh,
that must have been so satisfying.
Yeah, so if I remember right, he broke 6 of his ribs and, like, punctured his lung or something like that. So, yeah, Rene Boucher, you get the honorary title of count in the Neighbor Science fiefdom.
Yeah,
no need to contribute definitely. To the Patreon. You're now a friend of the show.
Count for life.
Count Rene Boucher. It's got a nice ring to it, actually.
I like it. Yeah. I like it. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, we gotta mention our first Duke Brandon Stone of Canada. Yes. He is our first yes. Patreon contributor. Thanks, Brandon. Sorry it took us this long to get to it.
We thank you very much, Your Grace, for your contribution to our page.
Okay. Number 9.
Next.
Number 9. Trump staring directly into the sun to look at the eclipse until someone told him not to.
like what the fuck even?
And this was funny, even though everyone predicted it was going to happen. Like, as soon as they
Everybody.
Announced they were going to show, like, watch the eclipse, everyone was like, I bet Trump's going to look directly into the sun. And he did.
The guys,
and it still
the
was
guys,
hilarious.
The guys that figured out, the astrologers that put all these things on a timeline, when they went, oh, there's an eclipse next year, we need to... there needs to be public service announcements. I'm guaranteeing you those guys went, oh, someone better let the White House know, because Trump's definitely going to look at the sun.
Yeah.
And he did. He really did. I sat there watching the video, and I remember I was laughing so hard I nearly fell off my chair, which is really hard to do because my chair's on wheels.
Number 8, the Hillary cult going full Alex Jones and concocting this huge Russia conspiracy, as well as now the Al Franken conspiracy. Lots of defenses of Al Franken's behavior, even though there's photographic evidence of it, they are insisting that that is not real. None of the people that are accusing him are real. Everyone's a Russian bot. Everyone who says Hillary lost the election, Russian bot.
I find it amazing that Hillary fans are able to get out of bed in the morning after Hillary's loss. It must be devastating.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, that's why they're so angry on Twitter all the time.
Well, no, I think that has more to do with the amount of wine they drink.
Oh, so honorable mention for the Wine Moms hashtag.
Which is easily one of the funniest things of the year.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
I have been laughing my head off. Because obviously I follow you on Twitter.
Yeah, so that was one of my top
And because
tweets.
I follow... Yeah, and the moment I saw you going on about the wine thing, I was like, what the fuck is this all about now? And click, 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 and suddenly I found the Wine Moms hashtag and
yeah.
everything that had been posted under that, and I spent the next half hour just silently laughing to myself.
Honestly, the best ones are the ones where they just directly quote actual users. Like the,
yeah.
take Bernie's dick out of your eye. Holy
Wait,
fuck.
What?
Yeah, yeah, it was. I think it was Candace Aston was like, yeah, if you take Bernie's dick out of your eye for 1 second, then you'd realize that something. It's just like, what? What? What?
I just don't understand the Bernie team. The Hillary team at all. Like, I get it. Bernie Sanders not the greatest candidate in history. He's got some issues and whatnot, but they what are we calling the Hillary team at the moment? Like, They've gone through so many names now.
Oh, I just call them Hillary Stans or Donuts or Wine Moms now. It's a pretty good one.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to go with Wine Moms. I don't get the Wine Moms. Like, if your objective is to win an election, then focus on winning the election. If you've lost that election, what exactly have they achieved by whining about that election?
Sorry, I found the original tweet. I had to go on a different account because Candace Aston blocked me like a week after I started Twitter. So the original quote is, "If you'd get Bernie's dick out of your eye, you could read the excerpts about how much blame she puts on herself." Talking about, I'm pretty sure she's talking about Hillary here. To some Bernard brother. And the best thing really is all the reactions, because apparently her fans think that was a sick burn.
Yeah, we're totally feeling the burn.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and retweet that on the Neighbor Science account. So if you follow the Neighbor Science account, you can see this tweet in all its glory. So, yeah, next up is The Economist's Speculative Fiction of UK Politics in 2030. And I'm going to read a little bit of that for you. I don't think, Peter, you haven't read this, have you? I think I might have read
this
before.
No, I haven't, because for some reason, every time I go anywhere near The Economist's website, they tell me that I've run out of articles that I can read. And I don't think I've read anything on there in like 6 months or something now, because every time I go there, they tell me my quota is up.
Well, Peter, if you'd read Economics 101, you would have known that this is a classic sales gimmick. You actually haven't read any articles. They're just telling you that you have, so that you think that The Economist is a great publication, so good that you don't remember reading it at all, and you'll just subscribe to it.
Fair enough.
Yeah, you learn about it right after anchoring and stuff like that, so maybe you should take a class, buddy.
Maybe I should. That's a good idea. That's a good idea. I think I'm going to go sign up for Stupidnomics. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then after that, I'll get myself a bachelor's degree in idiotnomics, and then after that, I will become president of the United States.
All right, so I'm going to read this article. I'm going to do a bit of code switching, even though I'm usually against that. I'm going to try and do some of the accents, okay? Because if I do it badly, then it's even funnier. All right.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is called How the Slow Death of Labor Might Happen, a dispatch from 2030. Yeah. So this is published by The Economist. unironically. All right, so I'm going to start here. Can anyone work this thing? Paul Nuttall barks, jabbing the touchscreen. He rues the day his aides talked him into traveling by self-driving car. It will make you look prime ministerial, they said. Bollocks. It just makes him look like a hypocrite after all those speeches about the evils of job-killing robots. This robot just drove him from London to Stoke without crashing. Is functioning air conditioning too much to ask? It is an unusually hot April day. Okay. Mr. Nuttall grimaces as he spots his signature tweed jacket and flat cap on the seat next to him. Shortly, he will have to put them on for a photo with constituents. Or perhaps his perspiration is just nerves. For the leader of the UK Independence Party, and now leader of the opposition, has much to be nervous about. The 2030 election is weeks away. He could end up as prime minister at the helm of a UKIP conservative coalition. How far he has come since 2016, that fateful year in which Britain voted to leave the EU and he was elected UKIP leader. Woozy with campaign tiredness and with a few minutes to go before he arrives at Stoke's Marketplace, a dilapidated Victorian pavilion now overshadowed by a colossal Independence Day monument to Brexit, he closes his eyes and recalls the first time he stumped there.
What the... Why would The Economist publish that? I don't understand.
So, to be fair, this was published in February, which I believe was before the special election, which I think was in June or July. Yeah. Even though now it sounds like the dumbest shit ever, because UKIP got won 1 or 3 seats, something like that. Yeah. They now are saying that it's going to be the majority or the opposition party forming a coalition with the Tories in 2030.
oh my God.
So, go ahead.
I wish I had an opinion on this. But my brain is still trying to wrap around that tweed jacket.
I'm just gonna read this whole thing because the whole thing is funny as hell. That was way back in January 2017. Tristram Hunt, the local Labour MP, had just resigned to run the Victoria and Albert Museum. Mr. Nuttall, a former academic born into a working-class family in Liverpool, seized the moment. His authoritarian social views, anti-EU purism, and attacks on Jeremy Corbyn's far-left, London-centric Labour Party charmed the pro-Brexit town of former pottery and steel workers. And the by-election on February 23rd... Oh, at the by-election on February 23rd, it made him its first non-Labour MP since 1950. That's a really bad sentence.
oh my God.
Yeah, so...
It's not just a load of crap, it's also really badly written.
Yeah. His campaign coincided with a development that would enable him to turn this one gain, in parentheses, UKIP's first defections accepted, into the 131 seats his party now holds. Horrified by the polling in places like Stoke, Mr. Corbyn obliged Labour MPs to vote for Brexit when it was put to Parliament in February 2017. The move appalled his left-wing backers. Once supportive journalists like Owen Jones and George Monbiot slated him. Okay. That's not the word I would have used there. All right. Loyal front benchers resigned. Some 2,000 members of the grassroots labor group signed an angry letter. Even the Canary, a slavishly Corbynista website, attacked its man. In subsequent months, as Theresa May's talks in Brussels came to little, the chorus of dissatisfaction in labor mounted. Well, they got one thing right. Theresa May's talks in Brussels coming to little. The final straw came in early 2019, when expensive labor billboards went up around the country bearing a message from Jemmeri Cobrin. This was one unforced error too many. So they think the downfall of labor is going to be a typo on a billboard. That's great. It's amazing. Union leaders and shadow cabinet diehards filed in to tell Mr. Corbyn, that he no longer had their support. Demoralized and exhausted, Labour's leader resigned, bequeathing a record low 19% poll standing to Emily Thornberry, the former shadow secretary who since early 2017 has trodden a subtly less pro-Brexit path than her boss. Yeah, I'm just going to go with bro-Brexit. 19%.
Oh my God.
That's like 20% lower than Trump, right? He has like, what was it, like 39% approval, something like that?
Yeah.
Or maybe it's 39% non-disapproval. I don't know. Doesn't matter. All those measures are bullshit. Except for the one about Bernie. That one's true.
okay.
Thanks to the...
Okay,
you got to take a break.
No. I just need to do a breathing exercise because my sides are starting to hurt.
Yeah,
I think I'm a little unfit for this.
Do some qigong.
Okay, go. Okay, I'm ready. I'm steeling myself for this.
Thanks to the distorting effect of Britain's first-past-the-post electoral system, Labour's 20% vote share on May 7th, 2020, gave it 155 seats of the 600 available. The Liberal Democrats, targeting Miss Thornberry's cosmopolitan base by calling for a referendum on rejoining the EU, took 23 seats on 15%. I think they only took like 15 seats in the actual, well, the 2016 election. This is a 2020 election. UKIP eating into Labour's working class strongholds, which that absolutely did not happen, and it's not going to happen, I don't think.
It will never happen. do they even realize what the demographics are and the future of demographics in the UK?
Well, I'm hoping it's just going to be the winning strategy of Labour, of actually campaigning. UKIP eating into Labour's working class strongholds took 17% of votes and 18 seats. This is a revolution, Nigel Farage, Mr. Nuttall's predecessor, told reporters on a visit to London. In parentheses, privately, the UKIP leader wished that Secretary of State Farage had stayed in Washington. Burn. Appalled by the party's decline, the few remaining moderate Labour MPs quit and formed a new party based on En Marche, the movement that had propelled the centrist Emmanuel Macron to France's presidency in May 2017. On the Move, OTM in parentheses, was bolstered by a series of defections by liberal Tories fed up with Mrs. May's hard Brexit. It went on to win a series of sensational by-election victories in big cities and well-off suburbs. An electoral pact with the Liberal Democrats became a formal alliance, then a merger. A seminal moment was the first of three live debates hosted by Facebook in April 2025, when Mr. Nuttall and Jess Phillips, the plain-spoken former Labour MP, now leading On the Move, together dismantled Mrs. Thornberry and Mrs. May. So, Emmanuel Macron is going to start a international movement of milquetoast centrism, which is going to inspire so many British people that it's going to destroy the Labour Party.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, we can go take a look, and isn't that already happening?
Oh, yeah, for sure, yeah. Everyone is really happy with the job Macron's doing, especially anytime he talks about Africa at all.
Yeah.
People seem to really be into that.
I'm enjoying laughing at the moment, so maybe we don't talk about Macron's African comments.
But yeah, so in the future, it's going to inspire the type of libs that are most concerned with optics. So this is definitely a realistic situation here. So moving on, the subsequent election would be the nail in Labour's coffin. Not the final nail, just the nail.
The nail. Apparently you only need one nail to keep a dead Labour Party down.
Yeah, maybe that's a British thing. I don't know. Seems like a bad idea, you know, if there's like a zombie situation at all. All they gotta do is push through one nail.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem very sturdy. Like,
do they even know anything about the zombie apocalypse?
Yeah.
Especially maybe, the Labour zombie apocalypse. I mean, my God.
Maybe it's their Christian legacy. Like, when the rapture happens, they want you to be able to get out of your coffin because it only has one nail in it. But, I mean, that seems like it'd be in a lot of Christian countries, but it's just in this one. Anyway, in 2025, the party ceded most of its metropolitan seats to On the Move, now endorsed by several centrist unions and most Labour grandees. With inequality rising and wages stagnant, the post-industrial heartlands switched as one to UKIP, which campaigned for, quote, real immigration cuts, the renegotiation of recent trade deals, and a referendum on reinstating the death penalty. all things of great concern to the working class. all three of those.
Do you have a...
Go ahead.
Is there a name there for this author?
I can't see... I'm reading off the cached version, the text-only cached version. The only name is Bagel Hot. I don't know who that is. Apparently this was in the print edition, though. So not only did... This wasn't even like a blog. This was an actual article that went in their actual publication that people pay money for.
Holy shit. Oh my god.
Yeah. It's great. Where was I? Mrs. Thornberry resigned, and her party, now on 43 seats, became the fifth largest in the Commons after the Tories, UKIP, OTM, and the Scottish National Party. Shouts out to the SNP. It fell to Mr. Nuttall to interrogate Mrs. May across the dispatch box. I think this is a caption. It just says, "Going gentle into that good night." I can't see images, so it could be a caption, or it could be this author is just a weird dipshit and just put Ketz quote in here for no reason. Is that Ketz? I don't know. Anyway, 5 more years on, Labour's death is moments away. Polls suggest UKIP will come first in the 2030 election, narrowly followed by the Tories, and just behind them, OTM. Mrs. Phillips says Britain must rejoin the European single market. She should be able to form a government backed by the Tories and Scottish Nationalists if she can persuade Labour to stand down its candidates. If she cannot, then UKIP will probably come first and be invited by King William to form a government supported by the Tories. So I also don't think that the monarchy is going to last until 2030, personally. I don't know about
really?
You.
No.
No.
Okay, I disagree strongly on that point. mostly because the British monarchy is to this day still very, very loved by the British people. The popularity rankings and for some very strange odd reason, even though they are literally of no relevance to modern society, they're popular as shit. And at the moment, there's a bit of a debate raging about whether or not Charles will be crowned king, because the people don't want him as king, and whether or not Prince William will take the throne.
Right. So here's the thing. Lots of liberal feminists are calling the monarchy woke now because William. Is it William? He's engaged to a black woman.
Oh, no, that's Harry.
Oh, that's Harry? Okay.
An American black woman.
Yeah, yeah, an American black woman. So we're going to start an American royal family, I guess. That's great. And so I think the base of the people that love the royal family are inveterate racists. And they're probably not going to really like a black woman being a princess. So they'll probably turn on the monarchy like the chuds in America turned on the NFL. That's my prediction.
Anything's possible, but I don't see it happening.
Yeah.
I think the love of feudalism is so deeply ingrained in British peasantry. That there's not much chance. I think they will accept whatever the royal family says they should do. And if the royal family says they should keep supporting the royal family, then that's what they're going to do.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping for kind of a Guy Fawkes situation to happen to the palace at some point in the future. Hopefully the near future.
Wait. And just clarify that for me. You're hoping that some dude tries to assassinate someone, gets caught, and then publicly murdered for that?
Yes.
And that we then have another holiday celebrating anarchy?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Yep.
Yeah, I like it.
Okay.
Could make for another good movie.
All right, so here, the last line, just Just perfect. Passage anyway. How long should I wait before I invite President Trump to London? Mr. Nuttall ponders to himself. Is 7 days too soon? And should I call her Mrs. President or Ivanka? As his car sweeps onto Stokes Marketplace, his phone begins to ring. He answers, yes, Labour have done what? What did Phillips offer them? Nothing? Jesus, okay. He hangs up, swears under his breath, and opens the car door to a wall of cheers.
That's, oh my god.
Just perfect
really,
ending.
Ivanka, should I call the US president by her first name? That's number one there. That's very interesting. Second, really, Ivanka? Really?
Yeah, really? No, she's actually a genius. She's
well,
not
if
a
you
failed
compare
daughter,
her,
she's a genius.
If you compare her to Daddy Trump, sure, but
just so good, so fucking good. All right.
Are you sure that's not a satire piece?
No, this is. I mean, go on the Economist website. I'll link this in the show description. You too can be. Incorrectly told that you have reached your free article limit. And then just go to Google, paste the article title, go to cached, and then hit text only version, and you'll be able to read the whole thing.
Holy crap.
How you get around paywalls. Okay. I'm a little out of breath right now.
Okay.
My throat's a little sore, but I think we should keep going on the list. We haven't even gotten halfway through.
No, we're about to start with Mr. Anthony Scaramucci.
Yeah, so number six is just Anthony Scaramucci.
I can't stop laughing.
Like, I kind of expected something like this to happen, like Trump to nominate someone who would say some fucked up shit and then get kicked out after. My prediction was like 2 weeks. So one day, holy shit. That was amazing. Definitely the best member of Trump's cabinet, for sure. What was it he said again? It was so good.
There's so much, like if you, I'm obviously I don't stay up to date on U.S. politics like I used to, so I honestly don't know which specific incident. Or a set of incidents you're referring to when you say Scaramucci, because the biggest thing for me this year was when he'd already been fired and he then referred to Donald Trump as a political genius who would not have won the presidency without using the tool of Twitter. Like, anyone... I follow Donald Trump on Twitter... just because I need a good laugh every day. And I have never looked at a single one of his posts where there isn't 90% of the comments on a post of his that are basically mocking the crap out of him. The only way that Twitter is what won him the election is if we're living in a parallel universe where... unicorns are still a thing, and they have mated with dragons to give us rainbows.
So I can't find the thing that I'm thinking of. It's basically like the one press conference that he actually did, where he like said fuck a bunch of times and said something about someone sucking his dick. I think just. Top-notch comments. They really should have kept him, I think, because that he was extremely on brand. You know, some fucking, like, gabagool New York Italian guy, like, talking like a total dirtbag and, you know, telling the press to, like, go fuck themselves, basically. Super on brand for Trump. I don't know why they got rid of him. But, the fact that they got rid of him after one day is, like, the funniest possible length of time. All right, so number five, A lot of people don't even remember that this happened in 2017, but it did. Fyre Festival. If you don't remember back, you know, as far as 50 years ago, that was the luxury music festival taking place on an island for rich millennials to go to that ended up being much like a refugee camp in the third world.
Oh, yes, I do remember that now.
See, you forgot about
and
it.
All of them,
it's been, and it's all been of them were like 60, 70 years since that happened. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They were all crying. They were complaining that the food was like prison food, even though it was like, I mean, it's just like school cafeteria food. Jesus Christ. Yeah, people like they went full Lord of the Flies on the island. Just spectacular.
That it wasn't that organized by like Ja Rule or something?
Yes, it was. Yeah. Yeah, Notorious Grifter, if I remember correctly. Ja Rule. so they didn't catch that. And also the main like finance guy, or maybe the main organizer guy, also a Notorious Grifter. But I guess people decided maybe this time is different.
You're talking about Billy McFarland.
Yeah, maybe. I have no idea. I did very little research for this episode. So.
He was... I do remember I was following what was happening at the time, and he was charged with allegations of fraud about the whole thing. And
yeah, yeah.
I remember he pled not guilty, and I can't remember exactly what happened. Damn it! Why was this so long ago?
Yeah, yeah, 1987 was too long ago, so can't really remember it. All right, number four.
Before we move on, I do remember that I remember one of the articles I was reading at the time saying that he shouldn't go to jail, McFarland. Shouldn't go to jail for the music festival because he did state outright that it would be a life-changing music festival.
You know what's also funny to me is there were I was posting about it when it was happening, laughing at all the rich dipshits that got grifted out of, you know, $12,000 or whatever it was. And there were a couple of people that I went to college with that were like, wow, you're really, like, laughing at people's misery? Like, yes. It's hilarious, okay?
I'm
yes,
African.
I am.
I'm African. I am totally legitimately allowed to laugh at the quote, unquote, misery of rich American
people. Yeah, of having to live like regular people in most of the world. Not having slaves do everything for you. Okay, so number four is that picture of Trump holding the glowing orb with King Salman, which... I am looking at it right now. Just perfect. Perfect picture. You can really tell how King Salman is a senile, old, dying man. Just the expression on his face. He looks like he saw two male homeless ghosts fucking each other. That's what I think his expression says to me.
It reminds me of that king in Lord of the Rings that also looked on the verge of death.
Yes, he looks exactly like that guy. And then Donald Trump, completely expressionless. And the glowing orb, like, so perfectly highlights the fucked up condition of his skin tone. So the lighter parts are completely white. And the dark parts are extra orange. and he's just kind of staring off into the distance. And
I am feeling the power of Sauron traveling through me.
And, you know, I don't know if everyone's looked at it closely, but the orb is actually a globe. So they're doing like a globalist, like black magic ritual, basically. And no one on Trump's side seemed to think that this was in any way tied to globalism. Them doing a sacred ritual where they put their hands on a glowing globe, not globalist at all.
No, definitely not. I don't know why anyone might think that. That's clearly a bulb. A bulb, not a globe. A bulb,
yeah,
people.
Yeah.
And not just a bulb. This is the best bulb. It's the greatest bulb ever. I've been told by people, and they have told me that it's the best bulb ever. Also part of that visit was, and you can find this on YouTube, there's a video of him dancing with a traditional sword dance that is, it's very cultural with royalty. But you can look it up, and it is easily one of the funniest fucking things you'll ever see in your life. Especially if you've seen the traditional sword dance being done here in the Middle East. It's...
yeah. Okay.
Okay.
So
moving on
number
to
three.
Number three.
Yeah.
And the riot this caused on Twitter was just amazing.
Yeah.
I loved it
gold.
All.
Okay. And yeah. So it's the November 2nd Antifa Super Soldiers thing.
Oh, God. The Antifa Super Soldiers are coming to kill white people.
Yeah. So just to give credit where credit's due, started by Krang T. Nelson, I believe.
Yep.
And then popularized by Tom Bloke, which is weird because I think he's a smaller account. But somehow the right wing really latched onto Tom Bloke's exact copy of what Krang wrote.
Because they didn't want to take on Krang T. Nelson himself.
Yeah, yeah, he does have that enormous brain that's very intimidating.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was especially fun for me to participate in it. You know, I took some great pictures.
Those were excellent pictures.
Yeah, yeah, I masked up and held an axe and, you know, said I was coming to kill some white people. And then my favorite of the photo shoot, I wrapped my head in a blanket, like a furry throw blanket, and posed with a bread knife.
For those who don't know what we're talking about and didn't see the tweet, the original tweet that Krang T. Nelson. Wrote, said, "Can't wait for November 4th when millions of Antifa super soldiers will behead all white parents and small business owners in the town square."
Yeah. All right. So, number two, getting close to the end here. This one is probably not as well known to most people. Baked Alaska's 8-hour live-streamed meltdown after getting banned from Twitter, then getting banned from YouTube for copyright infringement of a video mocking his meltdown. So, Baked Alaska got banned from Twitter. I don't actually remember why he got banned. That's not important, though. The important thing is he did an 8-hour stream where he just complained about getting banned, said his free speech was being suppressed, and then just talked to any person who would even glance in his direction and tell them that he got banned from Twitter, and try to be their best friend and you know, support him for being banned. Couple choice moments from that. One, he talked to some guys in a pickup truck. And he said, "Oh, can you believe I got banned?" And they were like, "Well, you know, they're a private company, so they can do whatever they want." And he had no real response to that. A guy, I don't know who it was. He was like a big chubby guy who came into the background and was just kind of like doing a little dance, like walking back and forth, just like photobombing it basically. And then Baked walked up to him and was like, "Hey, you know, do you support Baked Alaska?" And the guy's like, "No." And Baked just could not accept that answer. Started asking him, like, "Why don't you like me? What? Why? Why? You have to give me a reason." And the guy was like, "No, no, I don't have to give you a reason. I can just not like you. That's fine." And Baked is like, "Well, I don't like you." He's like, "That's fine." And then all the people watching the live stream started calling him like a cuck and fat guy, soy boy, fat fuck, and stuff like that. And the guy was just like, "Oh man, look at all the comments. It's great. Yeah. Oh man. Anyway, I'll see you later." He just walks away. And Baked was like, he was like, "Oh, you're a disgrace," or something like that. And the guy was just like, "Okay."
Should have turned to him and said, "Well, at least I'm on Twitter."
Randy G. Dub, I think that's who it was, made a video. It was like a little animated icon of Baked with his selfie stick, like spinning around in a parking lot, like wailing. And Baked tried to change the audio for that and make it about himself. And he got reported for copyright infringement and banned from YouTube.
I love it.
So if you get some time, go check out the live stream. I'll try and link that in the show description as well. It's comedy gold. It's really funny. So now we get to number one. Some of you may have already guessed what this is by process of elimination, because there's no way this could not be in the top 10. Many people have compared it to 9/11 in terms of how funny it was. this is the Toilet Paper USA Diapy protest. Do you want to explain this, Peter, or should I just go ahead and?
No, please do. Okay. Please do. I'm doing my best to keep my face straight, and it's not working.
So for those of you who don't know, TPUSA, also known as Toilet Paper USA, is a conservative think tank that gets paid millions of dollars to make memes. They make the absolute worst memes that you have ever seen. Worse than any like Hillary Clinton dank meme stash. Worse than that.
I'm sorry, I can't.
Like one of my favorite examples is the one where it's like Bernie Sanders wants to do socialism. Whoa. We tried that already, and then it's a picture of a breadline from the Great Depression in the United States. So for this diapy thing,
I'm actually having to hold my breath at this point.
You can just mute your mic if you have to, but it is fun. It is better to have the laugh. So let's not. They do a lot of campus activism because their big thing is political correctness is ruining college. So they staged a protest at Kent State University, where they had a couple of students. They wanted to protest safe spaces because, as everyone knows, that's a huge problem destroying the country. That's really the main thing, you know. Number one, safe spaces. Number two, being rude on airplanes. So to protest safe spaces, they decided to compare the people who liberals, all liberals who all like safe spaces, to babies. So what they did was they had some adult college students put on diapers and crawl around and suck on their thumbs in a playpen. Yeah, so they owned the libs by wearing diapers. and as many others have wondered, did they go pee-pee and poo-poo in the diapies? Unfortunately, we will never know the real answer, but my guess is absolutely.
Oh, we all know exactly the real answer. The first opportunity they got, like, I guarantee you half of them shat in those diapers within 30 seconds of putting them on. Because what is better than the feeling of nice warm poop against your butthole skin?
All right, so yeah, that's our list of top 10
the top 10 funniest moments of 2017.
The funniest year to ever have happened.
Yeah. Oh, I just remembered what my other honorable mention was. Was that moment at the Oscars where I had the two moments at the Oscars where the one was where the guy was told he won and he didn't even notice because he was too busy texting on his phone. And the other one was when the wrong...
they called the wrong name? Was that what it was?
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, that was great.
It was a total moment of
classic
what's
bit.
That guy... Yeah, yeah. Now I can't remember the guy's name that did the same thing at the Miss Universe pageant or whatever.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Anyway.
Oh, my God.
Honorable mentions only.
Yeah.
Okay. So, since we're done with the comedy now, it's almost superfluous to talk about how politics went in 2017. But I think let's just... For those people who think that politics went to hell in a handbag in 2017, I completely agree with your take on this, that it wasn't... Look, it wasn't great. It wasn't...
Oh, you agree with my take?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
I do.
I was going to have to I'm come over to
I'm
Bahrain and punch you.
You're American. You'd never be able to find Bahrain.
I vaguely know where it is now. Thank you very much. Thanks to my strong opinions on Syria.
Yeah, we're nowhere near there.
Yeah.
So I'm going to quote you verbatim here because I think you actually hit the nail on the head.
Okay.
I'm not going to do it in your voice, though, because...
do the accent, come on.
I don't... Okay, I'll try.
This is a mostly comedy episode. We may as well throw some comedy into the serious aspect here.
Fair enough. I'll try it. Trump actually wasn't able to accomplish much. While the left has been seen... see, I'm screwing it up because I'm trying to focus on the accent. While the left has seen a renewed energy, the tax cut was probably the worst thing to happen. The Democrats were predictably useless, spending most of their energy complaining about procedure and decorum instead of doing what they should be doing, which is being the biggest possible pain in the ass to every single thing Republicans ever try to do.
I like how
that's exactly what
the
you sound
American
like
accent is just like... saying vowels in a high pitch.
Yeah, you've got a much lower voice than I do, naturally. And I have a bit of a whiny voice. So I will go drink some onion, raw onion.
Yeah, drink some
juice.
Raw onion juice. So, yeah, the main take from people, you know, is the whole this is not normal thing, which I don't know who I heard... the reaction to this to from that was a really bad sentence. I don't know who I heard this take on that take from, which
Wait,
is okay. That like this is first of all either like yeah okay either you are trying to distance yourself from the fact that America is extremely racist and always has been, or you are just so out of touch that you didn't even realize that America was this racist. So, yeah, it is absolutely normal. The only thing that's really abnormal about it is that Trump is the funniest, dumbest, fattest, oldest president. And he doesn't have any manners. And, I mean, I think that's great. But, you know, still not that big of a departure from George W. Bush, who, like, holy fuck, the rehabilitation of his image has probably been one of the worst parts about 2017.
Trump, when you're such a bad president that you make W look good, wow.
I mean, yeah, but, like, he shouldn't make W look good because W is, so far, is still a worse president. He killed millions of Iraqis.
Let's face
there's
it,
no
Trump
comparison
hasn't had
at
a
all.
Chance yet.
The worst thing that Trump has done so far is, like, drop a Moab and do the tax cuts and be a really rude guy who is a sex criminal who got elected to president. But, hey, guess what? He's not the first sex criminal to be in the Oval Office either. So, this is normal, okay? It's normal.
Agreed.
All right. Let's see. Did you want to do anything about science in 2017? There doesn't seem to be a whole lot of interesting stuff.
Not a whole lot of interesting stuff. Like, I did share that one article with you that talks about what are the big accomplishments and the awards and stuff, but when I read through the article, I was like, boring.
Very boring. There were some vaccines for Ebola and malaria, but big fucking deal. Who cares about those diseases?
Do you know what pisses me off about that?
What?
Africa struggles for decades with the Ebola virus. Literally decades. Thousands of lives lost. Families suffering left, right, and center. One fucking American gets Ebola, and suddenly they manage to come up with a fucking cure within a year.
Yeah, it's so fucking transparent.
Jesus Christ. Anyway, let's not talk about the fact that the main area affected by the Ebola outbreak was a remnant of something that was fucked up by the US originally. And for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, go look at the history of Liberia.
Oh, yeah, it's terrible. Yeah.
Yeah. And
basically, the property of Firestone tires.
Yeah.
All right. So let's go to movies and TV in 2017. I got a couple good lists. I'm sure that you have some lists that you could at least rattle off the top of your head. Do you want to start us off for that? We'll do the top five movies first.
Okay, top five movies of the year for me. I haven't seen it. Yours. I haven't seen... How many of them? I haven't seen Blade Runner. I haven't seen Get Out.
Wait, you haven't seen Blade Runner?
No, I haven't. I haven't had
a
chance.
Okay.
Man, yeah. And by the time I was ready to go watch it, I had free time. It was off-circuit. So now I'm waiting so that I can legally purchase it through a legal site that has nothing to do with illegal downloads.
Yeah,
at
no,
all
we
whatsoever.
Fully support intellectual property on this show.
Yeah, totally. Thank you, FBI, for sending me that message and reminding me.
Yeah, that's a shame because that was one of the few movies where it was would have been
worth
so much better to see it on the big screen. You know,
agreed.
The rest of them, whatever. But yeah. Go on with your list.
One of my top movies of the year, although obviously when you have time to sit back and think about everything and the content and analyze it from a personal perspective and then later buy the very legitimate copy and rewatch it. One of the ones that I think had the biggest impact for me was Wonder Woman.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. It had nothing to do with feminism, even though I am a feminist. It had to do with the fact that it was the first thing done by DC and Warner Brothers that I didn't feel like vomiting in. Yeah. This could be because I don't think Steve Mnuchin had anything to do with it. But yeah, I was impressed by the movie. I was impressed. The soundtrack was fantastic. Interestingly, that same theme song for Wonder Woman.
That was my favorite part exactly of the movie, honestly, was the theme song for Wonder Woman. It was pretty, you know, it slapped.
It's a primal song. Yeah. It engages you at a primal level, which is exactly the same reason why Thor Ragnarok appealed to me. It was that same riff, essentially.
I really like the one that's on those Black Panther trailers, too. That one's fucking
great.
Oh,
man, I can't wait for Black Panther. I'm loving it.
Yeah.
But I'm keen for all things Marvel and DC, even when they make me want to vomit.
Yeah.
Also on my list, obviously, is Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
That was great.
I went to go watch that with my wife. And
perfect opening scene on that movie.
Man, I literally, there was so much, and I've gotten the movie since, and I've rewatched it, but rewatching it a second time, I still could not take my eyes off Baby Groot dancing. Yeah. it is one of the greatest things in cinematic history, in my opinion. There's so much going on in that scene in the background, and you don't notice any of it because Baby Groot is so extremely well done. So that was definitely in my top five. Stepping away from the superhero movies, one of the movies that I enjoyed this year was that one done by Michael Keaton, where he plays the guy from McDonald's.
The guy from McDonald's. I don't know what you're talking about.
Let me do a very quick search here. And I'll see if I can find it.
For a second, I was like, holy shit, did Birdman come out this year?
Maybe I only saw it now. No, it's called The Founder. Let me just double... It was released in 2016.
Okay.
So basically, it tells the story of how he... He was a salesman traveling, selling, I can't remember what, unsuccessful, very unhappy with his life. And then he goes and he has a burger at the original McDonald's and, sees how they go about it. And they had the what is now commonly understood to be the McDonald's technique that is used by fast food joints all over the place. And he was dumbfounded, and he immediately started franchising, and he introduced them to the concept of franchising, and eventually he stole the entire company from the two guys that originally did it. And I was really impressed by Michael Keaton's performance. He was very dedicated to the whole thing. He pulled it off very strongly, and yeah, I loved it.
I'm surprised they haven't made more movies about McDonald's, considering how important it is to...
McDonald's,
the image of America, really, you know?
Yeah, I think McDonald's avoids it because when... And
the
I think filmmakers
was, like, really fucked up and awful.
Yeah, pretty much. But I also think that movie makers tend to sort of avoid it because they don't want to face any kind of litigation from McDonald's, who, although they're on the decline in recent years, they still hold a lot of financial clout.
Yeah.
So, why put yourself at risk like that?
Speaking of which, 2017, the first year that I have ever seen a McDonald's shut down.
Wow, really?
Yes.
I've seen several.
Yeah, in Springfield Plaza in Virginia, McDonald's shut down and was replaced by Moby Dick, which is a Mediterranean kind of restaurant. You like kebabs and stuff like that. It's pretty good, actually.
Cool. There was one more. Now I'm trying to remember what it was. And I don't know if it was a movie from this year. Of course it was a movie from this year. I cried, okay? Because I thought that it was the culmination of a long journey that had... It had its ups and downs. I didn't like all of it, but man, what a way to end the story of Wolverine. Hugh Jackman's performance in Logan. I know we talked about the movie
in season one
of the podcast. We kind of kicked off our entire podcast experience with it, but a truly wonderful performance by both Sir Patrick Stewart and Hugh Jackman in Logan. I don't think it features as the top movie of the year by any means, but for me, on a personal level, being the big geeky, nerdy comic book fan that I am, I thought Logan was fantastic. Other people might say Dunkirk, and I don't give a shit. I don't like war movies. I don't like war movies that are about real wars.
Everybody started talking about it, and I was like, oh, wow, another World War II movie.
Gee.
I'm sure that's people's reaction to, like, Marvel movies, but, like, y'all, World War II movies have been played out for, I don't know, 5 decades?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, they haven't actually stopped.
Yeah. Stop fucking glorifying World War II. It wasn't good. It wasn't the good war. It was also a bad war. Okay?
Yeah. Okay, so before we get on to your top five,
okay.
I just want to... this is two honorable mentions for the two worst movies of the year. And I honestly can't decide which one should get worst movie of the year. First was The Fate of the Furious. How this franchise is still alive, I don't understand. It was a truly, truly horrible, terrible experience to even have this playing as audio in the background. I wanted to murder babies and feed them to dead puppies as a way to relieve the pain of watching that movie. And then, just for shits and giggles, about a week later, I decided to give it a go and really, you know, just have a look. Maybe it's better than the trailer suggested. Maybe they've done something decent with it. And I watched Baywatch. Oh my God. I cannot. When American Pie first came out, it was popular, and we can all understand why it was popular. But by the end of the franchise of American Pie, we understood why the movies were terrible. This makes American Pie, even the later Bandcamp ones and... this makes that look like top-notch, Oscar-worthy, brilliant, deep, thoughtful, insightful cinematography.
That bad, huh?
It was easily the most horrible movie experience next to Fate of the Furious.
And so not even like wrapping around into good? It's not even like so bad,
no,
it's good. It's just
No. the word good can only be associated with these two movies if what you're doing is you're including a good way to murder your worst enemy.
Okay, good way to torture so people at Abu Ghraib.
I honestly think it is being considered for torture by the International Criminal Court.
Okay, so my top five, I'll just go in regular ascending order. Number one, Get Out. I thought it was fantastic, reminded me of classic horror movies. Did you say you hadn't seen this one yet?
I haven't seen it, and I've heard so many good things that I really do want to watch it.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of horror, but I get the feeling this is more of a thriller than a horror.
So Diane is... an absolute chicken shit when it comes to any horror movies. Apparently she used to love them, and then something happened, and now she gets scared by, like, the trailers of horror movies. Makes me, like, mute the TV and stuff when they come on. But she absolutely loved Get Out. It was a perfect movie. I couldn't think of any way to make it better. Shouts out to Jordan for... making and directing it. It was awesome. Yeah.
Sweet.
Number two.
It's on my, consider it on my list to watch.
All right. Number two, Logan Lucky. Another absolutely perfect movie. Great comedy. Very, very lovable characters. Daniel Craig and Adam Driver really stood out to me. Yeah, great comedy.
I have it, but uh-huh. I haven't watched it yet.
Okay. So you know like the gist of it. It's like a
Yeah.
heist movie, but for rednecks. Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeehaw.
Number three, The Big Sick. By
Again, I have it, but I haven't watched it.
Okay, yeah, by Kumail Nanjiani. One of my favorite Twitter comedians.
Oh, yeah, he's the dude from Silicon Valley.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, don't agree with his political opinions most of the time, but very funny guy, and he made a really great drama about apparently his real-life story, and I definitely cried in the theater, so it was good.
Aww.
it was sweet. Come on. Number four, Blade Runner 2049. I thought it was better than the original. Don't at me on this. Great story. Much better story than the original one. Obviously, the special effects are improved. The direction was much better. I thought, every shot seems very deliberate in its choice of lighting and color and all that stuff. So yeah, I recommend that one. Number five, it's a tie because I can't decide which one I liked more. Some people are going to discount my taste in movies for this, but fuck you. Number five, Planet of the Apes.
I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, I thought it was really good.
I honestly thought it was brilliant. The CGI on it, number one, was fantastically done.
Yeah, definitely.
I couldn't fault it. And second of all, the way that the story was structured was fantastically done.
Yeah.
Anyone who calls your taste into question can come and see me.
Yeah.
I promise.
I really liked...
will not put a jihad on them.
I really liked the pacing of it. I thought that was great. It kind of gets right into the action and everything. It was just good. And then the other number five for me is the new Thor movie, which was very fun, very funny. I love the director...
Taika Waititi.
Okay, hey, I got his name right. yeah, and his character is one of my favorites. If you don't know, he voiced the guy who's like, "Hey, we're gonna go get on that ship. Want to come?" He was that guy. He was always funny when he showed up. So that's my top five movies.
Okay, cool. I kind of agree with your top five TV shows, except for obviously I don't watch Real Housewives. I never have, and I don't think I ever will.
Oh my god, it's so funny, dude! It's so funny.
And even for comedy, I can't put myself through that. I don't like most reality TV shows, and it's gotten to the point where the only way I am able to watch reality TV is if I'm learning something. So, like, I'll watch MasterChef Australia, or I'll watch... There's another Australian reality show called The Block, which is all about renovation and so on and so forth. And it's really a fun kind of thing to watch. It's not my top TV, but if I'm going to watch reality TV, I'll stick to stuff like that. Real Housewives?
So, I actually wanted to put something from Real Housewives in the top 10 funniest moments of 2017, but Diane pointed out to me that it did not actually start in 2017, so it doesn't count. It was a recent episode of Real Housewives of New Jersey. They reconciled a situation that happened long ago, back in about 2009, and it was the funniest thing I've ever seen. My brain was broken for like the next 24 hours. Like, I would just think of it and start cracking up. And I'm really glad that I work from home, because all of my coworkers would have think that I have had a psychotic break.
Would have thought.
Yeah,
would have thought. Even thinking about it now, your brain is breaking.
Yeah, it was really funny. Like, just the, I just gotta say the one line that really cracked me up. It was, when you called me a prostitution whore, I could not believe it. Just the phrase prostitution whore is one of the funniest. It's probably the funniest two words ever put together. Prostitution whore. It's just, oh my god.
Do you know why we enjoyed this kind of reality TV show, right?
Because it makes fun of alcoholic rich women?
Because it makes us realize that we're better people than them.
Yeah.
And it's everyone wants to feel like they're better than someone else.
Yeah, that's
and,
true.
And so, yeah, for me, it's
no one
kind
ever called
a
me a prostitution whore, I'll tell you that.
it's a kind of Schadenfreude thing where basically we get to, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so I'll go through my top five TV shows and hopefully you have a couple. So, number one, funniest TV show on television right now, C-SPAN. That was a great fucking joke.
That really was. That really was. I'm laughing on the inside.
No, for real though, my number one is actually The Orville. I was pretty skeptical about it.
Why though? Like, I can put
enjoyable.
It in my top five. I can put it in my top five, but as number one? Man, no.
Well,
no,
for I have not been watching many TV shows that started in 2017, so I really had to scrape the bottom of the barrel for this list.
Yeah, no, look, TV hasn't been that great so far this
year.
Yeah,
it's been pretty shitty.
But I just find the Orville, I find the commentary, the kind of social commentary that that they're trying to pull off, I find it clumsy. Like, there's no subtlety in there at all.
Yeah, I don't really care about that. I mean, the original Star Trek wasn't, like, super subtle about its social commentary either, and...
Oh, yeah.
You know what? Everyone this year is doing the absolute most ham-handed social commentary.
Yeah.
Probably in American history, because of Donald Trump and everyone thinking he's not normal. So everyone and their grandma is doing social commentary, and everyone is doing it very badly. And
I think the Orville is not touching the
topics that everyone else is, really.
Yeah, no, fair enough. But the tipping point for me was they did an episode, spoiler alert for those of you that haven't watched it, they did an episode where it's all about the... they go to this planet where everyone is... they vote directly on each other's right to exist,
yeah,
kind of. And it was a very ham-handed push. It was propaganda, essentially, for representative democracy being a better form of governance than direct democracy by completely strawmanning the concept of direct democracy. And
didn't bother me too much was because I saw it right through the straw man and just saw it as like, oh, like, yeah, they had this weird fucked up voting system that's terrible, like self-evidently terrible. So that one didn't bother me a whole lot. Although I do think that the community episode about Meow Meow Beans was a much better version of it.
Oh, I don't think I saw that one.
Oh, my God. It was one of the classic ones.
I'll make sure to check that out.
Okay.
Okay, I do agree with you about My Hero Academia.
Oh, you've been watching that?
Yeah, man. It is absolutely brilliant. Mm-hmm. It's genius. I love it. I love it. As far like as anime shows go, it's like my top three.
Yeah, if you've ever liked anything with superheroes, this is like a Marvel movie except much better. I think it's a lot better than any Marvel movie that's come out, with maybe with the exception of some animated stuff, but yeah.
Yeah, no, this is genuine, genuine genius.
Yeah, I'm very excited for the next season.
Yeah, I was actually introduced to it by His Grace, the Duke, Brandon Stone, who put me onto it and insisted for weeks that I watch it, and then I finally relented and I watched it, and then I couldn't get enough, and I sort of binge-watched all of it in one go, and oh god, it's so good.
Yeah, I love every character in that show. They're all great.
Yeah, agreed. I don't know what the Kato is.
Oh, Kato, the right answer. Kato. You, I think, would love it. So it's a lot like Arrival. It's the same concept. So it's a super like advanced alien species comes to Earth, and they assign a diplomat. There's not as much of the like language translation aspect of it, but it's basically diplomacy with a much more advanced alien species that comes to Tokyo.
That sounds awesome. Yeah. I have to check that out.
The ending, the reason it's number three for me, which I guess I should put it higher than the Orville. I don't know. It doesn't really matter that much. But the reason it's not above My Hero Academia is because the ending is kind of disappointing to me. I won't spoil it for anyone who hasn't watched it. I will just say that much.
I will prepare myself to be mildly disappointed.
Yeah. So
number four, 100% in agreement. I'm loving it. I haven't managed to finish everything because I've been too busy lately. But oh my god, The Punisher is amazeballs.
Yeah, I was very skeptical because for me, The Punisher is like the cop superhero. He's like the cop's favorite guy. You may not know this as much because you don't live over here, but every single person in the United States that has a Punisher sticker on anything is the biggest piece of shit. They're awful, awful people. They love when the cops murder black people, and they're just horrible scumbags who should all die. But the Punisher show was great.
Like I said, I haven't finished it, but I think it is one of the best cast shows that I've seen in a long time. All the characters, perfect, no issues with the show whatsoever, except for one of the early episodes, and they did this product placement that was... It was so clumsy and obvious and terrible, where they had the dude's wife was leaning on the counter after giving the kids some juice, and the box of juice is right next to her, and it's there for, like, ever.
I didn't notice that part.
If you ever
do rewatch... I've been seeing a lot of clumsy product placement on...
Yeah, no,
product placement is getting... Especially on the streaming TV shows.
Yeah, obviously they're starting to figure out the revenue thing, and at least, you know, the cable networks and everything, they've been at it for a long time, so, like, they've gotten used to dealing with new ones. And a bit of subtlety, and they understand about how to keep things under the radar while still working on the subconscious mind. these streaming channels, they need a little bit of finesse.
Speaking of which, we've come to our sponsored section of the podcast. I am currently wearing MacWeldon underwear, eating HelloFresh while using MailChimp, and shit, what else is there? I don't know. I'm also drinking a Yingling lager at 9:30 in the morning.
I did use Google to search something.
So number five, I couldn't really pick. Silicon Valley was pretty good this season. Not even really as good as the last ones, though, I don't think.
It's
kind of repetitive, I think. But it's still funny.
And also, there's... the funniest thing to come out of the season for me was... the end of the season, you've got the guy that I think it's played. His name's TJ Miller.
TJ Miller, yeah.
So it's really funny for me. He's been written out of the show.
Oh, he has?
And it's Oh yeah, no, he's out. He's completely out. He was.
And he was like the best contract.
Well,
him and Jared,
sort of. Yeah, I like Jared. Yeah. But he's been written out of the show, and instead of saying that, look, we had a fallout. There was some issues that happened, and we decided to part ways or whatever. He went onto social media and said that it's all a goof. He decided on a lark as a joke to leave the show and to see how they would deal with going on with the next season without him. And it's like, oh my god, dude.
It's a good bit.
Why couldn't you just say that there was a scheduling conflict because you were doing that shitty emoji movie and...
he was in the emoji movie? Oh my god.
He's the lead character, dude.
Oh man.
In the emoji movie. And
sorry,
it,
TJ,
it's
I lost
because
some serious respect for you just now.
He got the job... in the emoji movie because of his performance in Silicon Valley, and everyone was so impressed that he'd upped his game as an actor that they gave him this leading role in one of the shittiest movies to ever be made. And then he goes and fucks it all up like an idiot. The only thing I want to add to your list, and this is I swear to God, everybody has to watch this. Go. I don't care if you have to download it, torrent it, steal it, break into your neighbor's house and swipe their DVD collection of it. Get yourself and watch a show called Trial and Error.
Okay.
It's starring John Lithgow. Uh-huh. And it's...
Is that where he's a judge or something?
No. He's, it's about a court case where he's accused of killing his wife.
Okay.
And it is one of the funniest things I have ever seen in my entire life.
Okay.
And I'm not going to give anything away. Go and watch it. It is freaking hilarious.
Yeah. Okay. I'll check that out.
Okay. Please do. And then we can chat about it
you
again
haven't led
sometime.
Me,
because
you haven't led me astray before. You did recommend Better Off Ted to me, which was classic.
Fucking
great
brilliant.
Show.
Portia de Rossi at her best.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah.
So.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
So, yeah, that's the only thing I would add to the TV list. And we've now gone through TV and movies. And I think we're actually running a little bit long today.
Yeah, we are. But that's all right.
But so what?
First,
people
first
are having
episode
fun.
Episode of the new season, you know, getting a little extra time in.
Woohoo! Look at all you people getting Patreon freebies.
So, just to give the audience an idea of what we want to go for coming up, I guess we got an episode for you coming up about industrial ecology. Which is a pretty interesting science you may not have heard of. And we basically plan on going through like scientific and political theories of the left for contemporary times, you know.
Yeah.
Most of the left
we're
are
not
Marxists.
Talking about,
and
yeah, we're not talking about the stuff that inform Marxists. We're talking about the stuff that informed leftists. In the modern context,
Marxism is very outdated, and there are much better theories available now to us that are much simpler to understand. You don't have to read an 1,100-page book to understand it. And we'd like to go through some of those with you guys.
I don't know. Hey, Capital is Power is a strong read, but we'll talk about that in the Capital is Power.
Yeah, but it's
episode.
Only like 400 pages.
Agreed,
and you can watch a video
of
it. You can't watch a
video pages.
Explaining all of Marx's theories in an hour and a half.
Not only that, like, how the fuck would you stay awake through that shit? we've got a lot in store for everyone this year. It's gonna be a good year.
Yeah. So we'll do the plugs. Oh, we still have resolutions and stuff.
I'm like wondering, are you leaving? Have you got like an appointment or something to get to?
Well, I am grinding herbs right now in preparation for being done with the show, but yeah.
Let's quickly talk about we've each got resolutions for this year that we want to talk about. Ryan's, I think, is more important than mine.
That's not true. Both of ours are equally important.
I'm not saying that yours is more important. I'm saying I think it is.
Okay. All right. My main one is I want to cut down on social media time. I spend way too much time posting. I've been extremely online for decades, literally, since I was probably 11 years old. I was more extremely online than any of you fucks before anyone even coined the term extremely online. Started off on, you know, forums, like really
before
obscure
it
forums.
Was and, cool.
Yeah, like, went on Neopets a lot, you know, just to highlight what a cool guy I am. So I'm trying to cut down on social media time, and I would like to replace it with some book reading. So I've actually already started on that. I've been doing a pretty decent job. You know, I read that industrial ecology book for the industrial ecology episode. And I'm currently about a third of the way through a brand new book that I started only like 3 days ago. So I think I'm doing a good job on this.
You're doing well so far.
Yeah.
You'll see now why I think mine is a little bit less important. Is that I want to be a much
already.
Bit...
Sorry.
I want to be a lot better as a person who is able to whistle. about a year ago, I had related to my diabetes, I had some dental issues, and I ended up having to get a set of dentures. And since then, I can't whistle. So my resolution for this year is to practice for a minimum of 1 hour every day until I am once again able to whistle, because I miss it. I miss it more than I can possibly begin to tell people. And I don't tell people because it's embarrassing to not be able to whistle.
And just to clarify, this is so Peter can catcall women and engage in targeted harassment.
Which, of course, as many people know, will give me a death sentence in the Middle East. moving on from that, we just want to have a quick word about what's in store for 2018. These are just very quick off the top of our head predictions, and we're going to keep it short and sweet. I reckon that because 2018 is a midterms year, I predict that the Democrats will win the popular vote, but because of gerrymandering and urban clustering, Republicans will hold on to the House and the Senate. Although, I might end up being wrong if the Supreme Court rules on a big gerrymandering case that they're currently deciding on. So we'll see how that turns out, and if they rule that gerrymandering is unconstitutional, it might just screw the Republicans over, Dems might win everything back, and the two-party system will carry on forever.
Yeah, so I'm a bit more cynical about it. Especially now, actually, like, you know, I wrote that the comment that Peter is the only one who can see it, really. Yeah, I think the Dems are going to screw everything up. I mean, look at the Roy Moore election. You know, they're facing off against a literal pedophile. Everyone knows he's a pedophile, and they have not, like, clinched that race. There should be no fucking way in the world that they lose, because all they have to do is be... You know, say, I am not a pedophile. I have not raped any teenagers. And the other guy has. So vote for me, the guy who's not a rapist pedophile. But they're not doing that because they're fucking stupid. So I think they're going to run a lot of bags of day-old white bread as their candidates. who nobody's going to want to vote for because they have no ideology and nothing to offer anyone. And so they're just going to lose. Probably, it's probably going to be like a 50-50 split. That's my guess, is they're going to take some seats, but they're not even going to take a majority. And then on a more positive note, early in the year, there's a state election in Maryland, and the DSA is planning to field or endorse candidates in Montgomery County, which is really close to Washington, D.C. So basically, it seems our strategy is to kind of take the area around D.C. and then try to move in, because winning elections within D.C. is very, very difficult. The Democratic establishment there is extremely powerful. But Montgomery County is so blue that this race will basically be decided in the primaries. So last month, the D.C. DSA formed an electoral caucus. So we are trying to move very quickly to get endorsements out to candidates before the big unions endorse anyone, trying to push the unions further left in their endorsements, hopefully based on who we endorse. So that's our strategy. We're hoping to get someone who's an actual left-leaning person and not a milquetoast centrist, and then we're going to be canvassing for the primaries.
Nice.
Yep.
That should work out well.
Yeah. So.
And that is our little mini prediction for the year. We're not going to predict anything about anything else, because people who make predictions are generally losers. And we're not losers. And we are winners.
Yeah. Fuck you, Ray Kurzweil.
Also, because the future is
written in stone?
Basically unpredictable to a certain degree, and we are never wrong, we don't put ourselves out there to be wrong.
No.
The only thing I can say with 100% certainty is that 2018 will be the year that things happen.
Yes. And note that if the Democrats completely rinse the Republicans and win every seat, I'm still not wrong, because what I said was, I think this is going to happen, and it's objectively correct that that is what I think right now. So, don't correct me on anything, because I'm correct.
Exactly.
Now,
I think, is the right time to do the plugs.
Yes. So, as we said towards the beginning, we now have a Patreon, patreon.com/neighborscience. We currently, we're only offering rewards within our own fiefdom. We aren't doing bonus episodes mostly because Peter doesn't have a lot of time right now. He's very busy. I'm very busy as well. I might be able to do bonus episodes. Maybe we could do solo ones or something like that. I don't know. But, what we want to do is we want to get Peter some new equipment. I am trying to get a portable recorder so that I can, interview people, in their domicile or, out somewhere or what have you. And then follow the Neighbor Science Facebook page and Twitter account to get updates on when we post new episodes, if you're not like me and don't check your podcasting app multiple times a day every day. You got anything?
The one thing that you need to keep an eye out for on our Twitter account, for the last few months, I have been very dedicated about a project that's very important to me, very close to my heart, and it's very it's very maturely called Operation Ninja Lasers.
Yes.
So if you can follow the hashtag Operation Ninja Lasers, we are bringing you all the inside track information on everything that is being done wrong by the world's richest man. We can't,
is he still the world's richest, or did he fall out? I don't know. I'm sure it'll change by the time we put this up.
Yeah. It changes so often these days. We are obviously focusing our attention on just the one person right now, but in future, Operation Ninja Lasers, with proper backing on Patreon, we plan to make the scope even bigger to maybe two people.
Yeah, and if you see any important news about Jeff Bezos, thank Peter for his investigative journalism.
You're welcome, everyone, in advance for thanking me. And please don't forget to thank me.
Okay. All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We're excited to be back for the new year for y'all. So
it's going to be a good one.
Look forward to the next one. All right. Bye.
Bye.